So last week we met Jack Sparrow, and he had a magic compass, a compass that could lead him to his heart's desire. And well, this week we meet Aladdin, and Aladdin's got a magic lamp, and Aladdin's lamp is full of power. By the way, there was a meaning to both video clips I showed you, so I hope you stored the early one away, because we'll be back to the song that we played at the beginning. But let's talk about the friend like me. The power is not the lamp. The power is the genie inside the lamp. And before anybody thinks, I am not about to compare God to a genie in the lamp that we command. But I am absolutely about to tie our idea of prayer to we have to have the ability to ask God. Now, when I watched that clip, to be very honest, and if you take offense at this, I don't apologize. Our prayer life looks like the genie in the lamp. All you got to do is rub that lamp and ask me for health, and poof, it's supposed to show up. All you got to do is rub that lamp, and you know what? Your financial issues, God's supposed to take care of those. Our prayer life sometimes looks like we just keep rubbing the lamp, and we think God's supposed to just provide, and that's not the way prayer is actually supposed to be. Did you know Jesus only gave us one specific thing as a church we're supposed to pray about? And that's where we're headed today. Now, we have been doing this series, and this is the last one in the series, talking about living in God's shadow. And well, to understand a shadow, first you have to understand what a shadow is. A shadow is a dark area or shape produced by a body of coming between the rays of light and a surface. And when that happens, you have to have two things to make it, and only two things to make a shadow. And mark these down. We'll be back to them at the end of the sermon. You have to have something, a solid object that can either absorb the light or reflect it. And then you obviously have to have a light. You can't make a shadow in the dark. It doesn't happen. And when you begin to look at the shadow, the result of a shadow is a result, it's an outline of the object opposite of the light. So you don't get a detail. You don't get to see what the faces look like. You don't get all the specifics. You just kind of get an outline of this particular shadow. So when we begin to talk about the idea of living in a shadow, the idea is to position yourself behind the object so that you do not produce a shadow. Okay, so you get down behind, like you get down behind the pulpit, and my shadow would go away because I've allowed the object in front of me to absorb or reflect all of the light, and so I no longer absorb or reflect any, so their shadow is all you see. And when we break that down, in essence, your shadow is absorbed by the object itself. And then we translated that in this series in the fact of how we, the individuals, and how we, the church, can position ourselves behind the ministry of Jesus so that it falls in line and what we are doing is absorbed into what Jesus was doing. It's really that simple. Isn't that what we call ourselves? We call this Parkview, fill in the blank, church. Do you know what Christian means when you break it down? Actually, it means Christ follower. Christ follower. So we all know how to play follow the leader. If you're going to play follow the leader, where the leader goes, you go. So if you're going to call yourself a Christ follower, then that means when you begin to look at Jesus' ministry, wherever he went, that's what we're supposed to be doing. So what does his shadow look like? Well, this is the verse that we have been digging into over the past month. Jesus went through all the towns and villages and teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news, the kingdom, healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." So in this shadow idea, we began our process by saying, okay, well, what did Jesus do? And what did the shadow do so that I can do what he did? And we broke it down to only four things. He went, or going, he taught, teaching, preaching, and then he ministered. That's it. Ministry being specifically looking at people's needs and trying to meet them. So that's what he did. All right, but when he did it, he got there, we needed to figure out, well, what did he see? Because what I see is important. And so when he got there, what he saw, he didn't see people that needed to be judged. He didn't see people that were like just dirty scoundrels. He saw harassed and helpless people. He saw victims. He saw people that were suffering with the sin condition, and he had the answer. He was the physician in the hospital. How can I help? That's what he saw when he saw lost people. And then what did he feel? Well, when he saw them as helpless and harassed victims, and he didn't see it as a burden. What happened is his heart began to break for them, and he began to feel compassion for them. In Sunday school today, we had our all-church pray. This is the fifth Sunday of the month, and we sat those aside specifically. We were going to pray as a group. And the first time we did this at the end of the first quarter, we did the fifth Sunday, and we kind of just prayed for ourselves. And this particular week, we did a different kind of exercise in the fact that I brought in some little sheep and some little coins and some little hearts representing the three sections of the lost, the parable of the lost in Luke chapter 15. And we spent the Sunday school time basically writing on the cards. The sheep were the acquaintances in our area, and the coins were our neighbors and our co-workers, and of course the hearts were our family members. And as we began to label these cards, you know, we didn't have a hard time filling cards up. We didn't. Matter of fact, we had plenty that we could pray for. The question is now that we pray for them, now do we begin to feel compassion for them? And now comes the question is, so when I pray for these people, what am I supposed to pray? What am I supposed to say? We're just going to say we're supposed to be saying what Jesus said. My prayer life should center around one central theme. And that, by the way, I just want to let you know, there's nothing wrong with praying for the sick. That's not what I'm saying. But as far as the cornerstone piece of our prayer life, we should look at what Jesus' ministry prayed for, and we should be doing the exact same thing. Why? Because we call ourselves Christians. Christian means Christ follower. That means whatever he did, that's what I attempt to do. Whatever he said, that's what I attempt to say. And this is the verse. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field." So Jesus is identifying a problem, and really this is just a math problem. Anybody here, your favorite subject is math? Me? I love math. You know why I love math? Because it's absolute. 1 plus 1 always equals 2. The second 1 plus 1 equals 3, we have a problem, right? Math is math, so the solution is always a finite solution. You can derive the solution. If you work hard enough, it's there. And so that's why I love the idea that Jesus produces this as a math problem. Now you're saying, what do you mean it's a math problem? Well, Jesus states the issue. There's a good side of the issue. The harvest is plentiful. Now, just so you know, I personally believe this was not a message just to the disciples. This is a message to us. And today, the harvest is still plentiful. How do I know? I got a stack of cards about that thick that didn't take us that long to fill out this morning. I read the newspaper. I watch television. I surf the web. I understand there are many people in this world that are walking in their life without a relationship to God. There are many. I don't have to look that hard. So guess what? The harvest is still plentiful. There are still lots to be harvested. Of course, there's the bad. Jesus says the workers are few. Tell me about it. Just can't find good help these days, right? I mean, the help you find sometimes isn't worth paying what you pay them to work. Good help's hard to find. What's wrong with this generation? You just can't find it. Well, the problem is that they don't see what we see. And they don't feel what we feel. And they don't have the compassion, and they're unwilling to say what this prayer says. Now, when Jesus identifies this problem, let's make this into a practical thing so you can understand it. Here's your math equation. If the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few, then you understand that which could be harvested and saved dies on the vine. Now, I'm not a farmer, but I get this concept. If I've got a great big crop of green beans out there and I don't have enough people to pick all the green beans ain't going to sit there forever, are they? They're going to wither and they're going to die right there on the vine. And so when Jesus identifies this problem, he says, I want you to know there is a great big harvest, but what's out there is going to die on the vine if we don't get some workers to go out there into that field. It means that which could have been used becomes useless. What can you use rotten fruit for? Compost, maybe. I mean, you know, I guess there's something out there that will eat it. Not me. But at one point it had a use and it had a value and it had a purpose. But because it just laid out there on the vine too long and nobody was interested in going out there and picking it, then it just withers right there and now it's useless. You can't do anything with it. That which was done to produce the work, well, that gets wasted. That which is done to produce the crop, that gets wasted. Now that's a big deal, because what was done to produce the crop, well, that's where the sacrifice comes in. You get to produce that crop, Jesus had to come and give his life. So that means when Jesus says that the harvest is plentiful but the workers are few, what that really means is that, you know what, some of the work that he did to save people, because there weren't enough workers, it goes to waste because there are going to be people out there that don't hear it. Wow, now that makes communion take a whole new light, doesn't it? Are we wasting the bread and the juice? Are we just dumping it out? See, here's the thing that we really need to get at. Because the harvest also produces the seed for the next crop, either if you have fewer workers, therefore you get less harvest in the future because I don't have as many seed, or it becomes more expensive to produce the harvest in the future because now instead of using the seed from the previous harvest, now I have to go out and buy more seed to produce my crop, and now I've got a money problem. See the way this works? Paul identifies this in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 10 through 11. Now he who supplies the seed to the sower and the bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge your harvest of righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. This is just a simple farming math problem. Harvest, more harvest means more seed. It means you have to take more seed to plant it. And it means that you'll have more seed going into the pan. And if you just don't harvest, then you can just expect a smaller and smaller and smaller crop. Or you better open up the checkbook, because it means we're going to have to go buy the pieces that we lost in the last harvest. This is the Jesus math problem. Now, this is not a new problem. Just so you know, we didn't invent this problem. Even back then, there was a resource problem. But here's what I want you to know. If we solved this problem, I advertised this in the email, do you realize we would solve every single problem in the church? Don't believe me? Let's talk about the attendance problem. If I was out there reaping a harvest, and I was out there bringing in the people, and I was out there picking the vines, then would we have an attendance problem? You know what? In that little bit of time that we were down there this morning praying, we identified enough cars, we couldn't even fit them all in this building if we brought them in. And that's not counting the ones that we didn't even cross our minds and the people that weren't there that didn't produce any car. So attendance would not be an issue anymore, because you know what? We would be bringing the harvest into the storeroom. You want to talk about budget issues? Again, this is math. Okay? I understand. I have a degree in business to go with my other thermometer degrees. Okay? So I understand this concept. If I have more people coming in that have committed their life to Christ, and they bring their resources, and they put their resources with my resources, then all of a sudden, guess what? There are more resources, and budget problems just kind of vanish, right? They just kind of go away all by themselves. Minister doesn't even have to preach a sermon on money, because guess what? Money's never the issue. The issue is harvest. See, as I told you, if you don't harvest, it gets more expensive in the future. The less you harvest, the more expensive your operations are going to get. It's a hamburger philosophy. If I produce one hamburger, then I have to cover all the cost of the restaurant and everything. I have to sell that one hamburger enough to pay for my rent, for my building, and my electricity. Not just the people that work. I got to pay for the overhead. But if I produce 1,000 hamburgers, then I can spread the cost of the overhead over a bunch of hamburgers, and I make more profit, and it costs less money per hamburger. See, this is the issue. What about service issues? Oh my gosh, are you tired of hearing people say in the church, we don't have enough people to do fill in the blank? You realize this solves the problem, right? I mean, again, more people. Therefore, more people have the same 24 hours a day that I have. Therefore, if they have more time and they put their time in with our time, then everybody gives a little of their time, and all of a sudden all of our service issues go away. And we never even have to preach a sermon on it. Because guess what? Service isn't the issue. It's harvest. What about the content in the church, this idea that the church just can't get along with itself? Well, you know, that goes away too. You know why? Stop and think about it. Busy people ain't got time to complain. They just don't. If you're out there and you're harvesting, you got very little time for contention. Think about like the idea of water. If I leave water and I put it in a pool and I just leave it standing there and I don't do anything with it, what happens to it? It becomes to smell and it becomes stagnant and things grow in it and it becomes useless to drink. How do you keep water fresh? You keep it moving. And when I begin to keep the water moving, now the water is fresh and it's usable and it's drinkable. So you get it. This idea of harvest, Jesus understood. If I can get their attention focused on the harvest, I solve all the problems right off the bat. They all go away. And nobody has to preach a sermon on it. Nobody has to think about this. It's just logical math. And Jesus understood this. Now, he gives the advice. What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to ask. Now, ask is real simple. It's to request something, request someone to do or give something. So he is telling you to ask. So this is where our Aladdin and the lamp comes in. For Aladdin to use that lamp, he couldn't just sit there and hold it, could he? What did he have to do? He had some things he had to do. He had to rub the lamp. And when the genie appeared, he couldn't just stare at the genie. What did he have to do? He had to talk to the genie and say, "Genie, this is what I want." This is where Jesus starts the idea of what it means to produce a harvest. The first thing you have to do is you have to ask for it. In case you think this is just a one-off little thing, the verses that you're looking at on the screen, that you're going to not have enough time to write them all down, you can just go out on Google, though, and look up asking verses from Jesus, and you'll get the same list. All of these verses are about asking for the harvest. Wow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 6. I didn't have to work very hard to find those. So 6 times Jesus specifically says we're supposed to ask. See, Jesus is telling us, guys, wake up. I have a specific ask that I want you to ask me for. I want to hear you say it. I want to let your heart feel it. I want you to know. Now, it's important that he identifies who we're asking. Because a lot of times we don't identify Jesus correctly in our prayer life. You know who we identify Jesus as? Well, he's not the Lord of healing, though, right? You ever hear Jesus call himself the Lord of the healing? Now, Jesus healed, and we're supposed to pray for people to be healed, but that wasn't his emphasis. He's not the Lord of worship. Now, he's the Lord that deserves to be worshipped, but you never hear Jesus call himself, "I am the Lord of worship." He's not the Lord of fellowship. I'm sure Jesus would love chicken if he lived in this era, but you do understand the idea that Jesus' focus wasn't about us getting together and having a good time and a good meal. Nothing wrong with it, and nothing wrong with praying for people that we need fellowship. Friendship is important. And he also is not the Lord of discipleship. He doesn't identify himself, you know, "I'm the one that you need to turn to so I can give you all the Trivial Pursuit answers and we can teach you all." He identifies himself as the Lord of the harvest. Now, this is important for us to remember, because when Jesus identifies himself that way, he's basically grabbing us by, you ever have somebody grab you by your ear or your nose and turn your head? He's like, "Hey, I want you to hear this, because I am calling myself the Lord of the harvest, and the harvest is all about," surprise, surprise, "the harvest is all about people." Don't you have a saying? I love the way that he uses their own words against them. Don't you have a saying, "It's still 4 months until the harvest? I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest. Even now, one who reaps draws a wage and harvests a crop for eternal life, so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, 'One sows and another reaps,' is true. I sent you to reap what you did not work for, and others have done the hard work, and you have reaped the benefit of their labor." So you do understand what we're supposed to be harvesting right now is what the generation in front of us planted. Therefore, when we say there is no harvest, we're basically saying they didn't do their job. So that means now we have to sow and harvest at the same time. That makes us a lot harder. Makes it a lot more expensive. You do understand that we've got our kids with us today, and everybody that's sitting here, you understand we're supposed to be planting the field for them to harvest tomorrow. How's your planting going? Are you leaving them in a worse position than the generation in front of you left? Or are you leaving them in a better position with a field that's plowed and planted and fertile and growing so that they can begin to pick that harvest and plant the harvest for the next generation? That's why this arrived on Kids Sunday. Because you understand, we are planting the field for their tomorrow with our activities today and how we go about doing ministry. You want to get your heart broke? Think about that idea. We're planting the fields for our kids and our grandkids. And they are the ones that have to be reaped today so that they can reap tomorrow. That's the way this works. The problem is we just don't sometimes see it that way. But Jesus did. As a matter of fact, the harvest, it's about priority. What did he say? But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. And all these things will be given to you as well. Now the things he's talking about is the things that we like to pray for. But Jesus said, you know what? Don't ask for those. Don't make those your priority in prayer. As a matter of fact, change your prayer life. Rearrange it. Tear it down. Make a new construction. Change your prayer life and start off by seeking the kingdom. Well, how do you seek the kingdom? Well, we've already had this conversation, right? The kingdom is all about growing people and leading people to Christ. And so, you know what? When I began to seek that, God said that other list, that 2-mile-long list that the genie pulled out, God said, you know what? I know the things that you need. I got those. I'm just asking you to pray for one thing and one thing only. And that is, I want you to pray for the harvest. And in case you think, well, I'm drawing too big of a conclusion, let me give you a little ministry statistics for Jesus. Here's your trivial pursuit questions for today. Did you know 80% of the parables Jesus told were about the idea of harvest? 87%! We love to say, well, Jesus taught about money, and Jesus taught about hell, and Jesus taught about this. Jesus taught about a lot of different things, but 87% of the time, his sermons ended in, go and find people and lead them Christ. Go and find followers. Go read the parables. I dare you. Do the math. 87% of the time. That his main teaching to the apostles were about going. Not about gifts. Not about discipleship. What were the two things he kept saying? You need to go. You need to go. You need to go. You need to go. It translated to the church. The two direct charges to the church. Come on, we know these by heart by now, hopefully. Matthew 28, Acts chapter 1. Both of them about harvest. You think Jesus didn't think this was important? You didn't think that Jesus didn't think this was the priority? See, this is not hard. This is just simple math. We're supposed to ask, and we're supposed to ask God for a harvest. Now, that's all well and good, but what am I asking for? Now, make sure you get this, because this is important. I've heard so many people in the past translate this wrong or preach this wrong, and it just loses all of its power. To send workers into the harvest field, that is what we are supposed to pray. So you get, the request is not to send us people, okay? We are not supposed to be saying, God, please send us people to fill up our pews. No, that's not it. You've missed the point of the exercise. Okay? We are not asking God to send us people. We're asking God to send people out into the field to work. And well, what's the difference? Well, there's a big difference. Because if I pray for somebody, for God to send me people, then after I say the prayer, I can sit right there on the pew and just wait for God to send them to me, right? I've done my part. I asked. But if I ask for God to send out workers, well, now this is a completely different equation when it comes to math. You see, note the owner of the field. Whose field? Not my field. Not what I want to do. Not what I planned. This is his field. Revelation chapter 14, verses 14 through 16 says, I looked, and there before me was a white cloud, and seated on the cloud was one like the Son of Man, we know that to be Jesus, with a crown of gold on his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. Then another angel came out of the temple and called in a loud voice to him who was sitting on the cloud, take your sickle and reap, because the time to reap is come, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. So he who was seated on the cloud swung the sickle over the earth, and the earth was harvested. This isn't my field. I didn't establish the boundaries. I didn't say whether we were going to plant butter beans, lima, or green beans. preferably green beans. I'm not a big butter bean and lima bean fan. I didn't say what the harvest looked like. God just says, you're a worker. Go to the field. It's my field. You let me worry about what's planted. You harvest. It's a call for God's people to get busy reaping a harvest from his field. That's what he's telling us to pray for. He's telling us to look at the church and start praying for the church to basically stop being pew potatoes. You know what a pew potato is, right? Well, we know what a couch potato is. A couch potato is somebody that sits on the couch all day long and watches television. A pew potato is somebody that sits on a pew and just watches people do things. You're laughing, but you get that picture. What happens if a potato sits too long? It begins to develop eyes and it gets all smushy. It turns green. It's not good for anything. We're supposed to get rid of the pew potatoes. So you'll remember that for the rest of your life. Don't be a pew. I can make a t-shirt out of that and make a fortune. Don't be a pew potato. But you do understand that's what God is calling us to do. Get up off the pew. And here's what you need to really understand. When I pray this prayer, what am I really asking? Let me read you a few scriptures. Matthew chapter 14, verse 16. Jesus replied, they do not need to go away. This is right from our sermon last week. You give them something to eat. I am sending you like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves, according to Matthew chapter 16. John chapter 20, verse 21. Again, Jesus said, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. Do you get what you're really praying when you say, Lord of the harvest, I see the ripe field. Would you please send some workers out there? What you're really saying is, send me. See, you're asking God to reach in and squeeze your heart a little bit. You're asking God, will you inspire me to do things that you did? Will you inspire me to see things that you saw? Will you inspire me to go and feel things that you felt? Isaiah puts it this way. Then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And I said, here I am. Send me. See, this prayer is all about, Lord, I finished that section of the field. Where would you like me to go next? God, that's all picked. The vines are empty. What's the next one? God, we fed those hungry people. We served those people. By the way, you like math, but I told you I'd give you the answer this week. I didn't forget. If you take the disciples and you take the 5,000 people and you divide it by the 12 disciples, you realize each one of them had to feed 413 people that day. Ooh. And that was just before they included the kid, the women and the children. That's a lot of people. Man. And they said, we fed them. Who's next? Well, now I got 4,000 more for you. Woo. And then I've got more. And I've got more. You understand, God's field is endless. We never should be stopping and saying, well, we're done. You're done when we have harvested every single person that's out there. Until then, we ain't done. You see, that's the way this works. You're not asking for volunteers. How? Jack's compass. I'm not interested in how I go about doing it. When you pray this prayer, you are looking for compassion, because the moment you pray this prayer, you just volunteered to go. That's why we don't pray this prayer. That's why we interpret this scripture that what I'm supposed to be praying for is people, is God to send people to the church. Because if I pray it the way Jesus just said pray it, then you get it, right? I just volunteered to go. I don't want to pray that prayer. No, I don't think so. That's not me. Don't you realize I don't talk to people? Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will. We talk to people all the time. You see, what you're really asking for the moment you see it, the harassed and helpless people, the moment you allow your heart to break for it and you feel the compassion, and they're no longer just names on a card or just people walking down the street, the moment I ask to send somebody, I'll go ahead and answer the prayer for you right now. And I'm not even God, but I know how the prayer works. God's answer is going to be, how about you? How about you? You see them? You feel them? You love them? How about you? And I began to think about that, and all of a sudden this prayer doesn't seem so enticing anymore, does it? It's a lot easier to pray for people in the hospital. Ain't a thing I can do for them. It's a lot easier to pray for God to fulfill this request and that request because ain't a thing I can do about it. It's a lot easier to pray, God, please send us people because ain't a thing I can do about it. But I prayed this prayer, and God said, okay, you just pray for it. Let's go do it. And that gets a little scary. I want you to think about something. I told you at the beginning of this sermon, there are two ways I can destroy a shadow. Okay? Two things you need, two ways to destroy it. The first thing I can do is I can take out the object creating it. Now, in our analogy, we're living in our Father's shadow by living in the shadow of Jesus, so I can take out the shadow of Jesus. I can take out all of his ministry and say, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to destroy the actual image. Because you do understand, by the time you do that, that means you're no longer following Jesus. That means you're making your own shadow. So that's not going to work. Of course, there's another way I can destroy the shadow. I can turn out the light. Right? I can leave Jesus there, but I can reach up there and flip the light switch, and therefore there's no light, therefore there's no shadow. And Jesus approaches the idea of no light this way, Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they will put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and, as that song says, glorify your Father in heaven. Are you following his shadow? Are you living in it? We sung that song, glorify his name. You know how you glorify his name in all the earth? Come on, it's not your question. It's one word. It's called harvest. That's what brings glory to God. We read the parable of the lost this morning. What gets God excited? People coming to Christ. Harvest. It's all about harvest. We sing that song and we think that means I'm supposed to sing louder. No. If we're going to glorify his name in all the earth, that doesn't mean I go up and down the street singing. It means I go up and down the street harvesting. And that brings glory to his name because what does he say in the parable of the banquet? Come in until my house is full. Keep going and keep asking. Keep going. Whoever you find out there, bring them in. Keep going until the whole house is full. Don't stop. Now, if this is the shadow Jesus cast, then you do get the analogy that I'm going to make, and you're not going to like this. That means if you're not following in this shadow, are you really following Jesus? Now, I'm not sitting here judging Christian or not Christian. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about if you're not following this shadow, if you have no place in your life for a harvest, then we need to start asking us as individuals, maybe us as a church, are we following Jesus? Or we made some other object that we put up and we're shining the light on that, and that's the shadow I'm now going to live my life in. You know why? Because that one sits still on a pew. Because that one stays right here. Because that one never gets involved with people. Because I'm going to tell you something. You're following the shadow of Jesus. Let me know how it works out for you if you think you're not going to get involved with people. Because that is who Jesus was all about.